activist, and we had Lempit Opik with us prior, former member of the British Parliament from London. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tahway, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Chapter Ali Imran from the Holy Quran, verses number 29 and 30, recited by Saeed Maliki.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قُلْ إِن تُخْفُوا مَا فِي صُدُورِكُمْ أَوْ تُبْدُوهُ يَعْلَمْهُ اللَّهُ وَيَعْلَمُ مَا فِي السماوات وما في الأرض والله على كل شيء يوم تجد كل نفس ما عملت من خير محضرا وما لو أن
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Say, whether you hide what is in your heart or manifest it, Allah knows it, and He knows whatever is in the heavens and whatever is in the earth, and Allah has power over all things. On the day that every soul shall find present what it has done of good and what it has done of evil, it shall wish that between it and that evil there were a long duration of time, and Allah makes you to be cautious of retribution from Himself, and Allah is compassionate to the servants.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. Iranians in the city of Mashhad attend a funeral for two Basij volunteer forces who were killed in recent riots. Kiev says the West should stop pressuring it into negotiations with Moscow now that Ukrainian forces are scoring battlefield gains. And in Malaysia, two claimants of victory and one parliament. The official results, though, show a hung parliament. Welcome here. Come to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Thank you for joining us. Top story this hour. People in the Iranian city of Mashhad have held a funeral procession for two Basij volunteer force members who were stabbed to death by rioters earlier this week. Mourners called on the authorities to bring the murderers to justice. Other regions in Iran have also been targeted by rioters or terrorists in recent days. They include the central province of Isfahan, where several security forces have been killed. On Wednesday, too, at least seven people were killed after terrorists opened fire on people and security forces at a crowded market in Izing, Khuzestan province. Among the dead were a woman and a child. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the United States, backed by Europe, is at the forefront of hegemonic powers' campaign against the Islamic Republic. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remarks in an address to a group of people from Iran's central province of Isfahan. He said all U.S. presidents, be it Democrat or Republican, have been leading the fight against the Islamic Republic since the early days of the Islamic Revolution. Ayatollah Khamenei said all U.S. presidents sought help from whoever at their disposal, including the Israeli regime and some regional countries, to stand against the Islamic Republic. The leader said the enemy is utilizing a whole range of resources, including satellite networks and cyberspace, to dash the Iranians' hope. Ayatollah Khamenei warned that anti-Iran media are spreading lies on massive scale. They are trying to give the impression that large numbers of people are opposed to the Islamic establishment in order to impress ignorant individuals. However, the leader noted that the people's mass presence on the stage to safeguard the Islamic Revolution amounts to a slap in the face of the ill-wishers. We've asked political commentator Scott Bennett about Washington's agenda for supporting the recent riots in Iran. Here's what he had to say.
The West lives by war and revolution and color revolutions and regime change, and technology plays a big part of that. The Iranians know the siphon phone technology, for example, is a CIA phone technology that no Iranians should use. They're aware that the CIA is planting Israeli Mossad, Zionist, Saudi Wahhabi, MEK, and other radicals into the sacred home, the sacred places of Iran, which I had the honor of visiting when I was there, Mashhad and elsewhere. So this is really the West trying, I think, to pivot, and Israel under Netanyahu accelerating this regime change agenda in Iran. And Iran needs to defend against it by arousing the diplomatic community, by saying terrorism is going to result in the Persian Gulf being shut down and all of the oil being stopped. Is that what the international community wants in a time when Europe is about to freeze to death? I don't think so. So the Europeans and Russia and China need to come alongside Iran and demand stability in the interest of their own self-preservation.
Iran says it's going to take reciprocal action against a Western-sponsored IAEA resolution, which it calls unconstructive. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian says the West has abused the UN agency's status for political purposes. He argues the resolution is part of the U.S. policy of maximum pressure on Iran. The top diplomat criticized the U.S. behavior toward Iran as highly hypocritical. The resolution calls on Tehran to fully cooperate with the IAEA's probe into what it claims to be uranium traces at three undeclared sites in Iran. Tehran says the IAEA probe is based on fabricated information given to the agency by the Israeli regime. 2 years ago, Joe Biden came to the United States presidency with promises of returning to the JCPOA. Halfway into his term, his policy on Iran has been seemingly the complete opposite. Rami Mazoeri has more from Chicago.
In the 2020 presidential election campaign, Joe Biden made a full return to the JCPOA pact on Iran's nuclear energy program, a key plank of his foreign policy promises. After 2 years in office, his report card on keeping that promise can only be given a failing grade. Not only has Biden not returned to the JCPOA, but he has constantly levied new sanctions on Iran and seems to have fully retained the maximum pressure policy of his predecessor.
For 2 years now, Biden and, you know, his team of foreign policy ghouls like Tony Blinken have refused to lift the illegal sanctions dating back to the Trump era. Trump illegally withdrew from the JCPOA, and they're refusing to lift those sanctions, which has made any negotiations with Iran impossible.
Biden had benefited from total control over Congress, but the Democratic Party lost control of the House of Representatives in the recent midterm elections. Low turnout and disillusionment with many unkept promises are often being cited as the main reasons for the Democrats' defeat. Last month, a top poll on foreign policy found that a whopping 79% of Americans want the United States to continue to pursue negotiations with Iran. On almost no other key foreign policy question was there such massive support. With Congress now divided and more conservative, most analysts say that even if Biden did genuinely pursue diplomacy, Congress would easily block the deal under the so-called Iran Nuclear Agreement Review Act.
You know, the ball has been in the U.S.'s court for 2 years, and you know, I can see no reason to believe that Biden or the U.S. is committed to the agreement or negotiating in good faith. All they've done is ask for more concessions from Iran. And actually, more recently, they seem a lot more interested in trying to destabilize the country by meddling in its affairs, its sovereign affairs, of course, referring to the recent protests.
With their recent accession to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, Iran has significantly expanded their diplomatic cooperation with their non-Western allies. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Turkish Defense Ministry says it has carried out airstrikes on outlawed Kurdish militant bases in northern Syria and northern Iraq, which it said were used to carry out attacks on Turkey. The ministry says the strikes targeted bases of the outlawed Kurdistan Workers' Party and the Syrian Kurdish YPG militia. Turkey says YPG is a wing of the PKK. This comes days after Ankara blamed Kurdish militants for a deadly bombing in Istanbul, which left six people dead and nearly 80 others injured. Ankara says the order for the Istanbul attack was given from Kurdish militants living in northern Syria. Both the PKK and the YPG have denied any involvement in the Istanbul attack. A key advisor to Ukraine's president has rejected the prospect of holding peace talks with Russia. Mykhailo Podolyak says it's bizarre to hold such negotiations when Kiev has the initiative on the battlefield. Podolyak says West's attempts to persuade Ukraine to negotiate with Russia amount to asking the country that it's regaining its territory to capitulate to the country that is losing the war. He says Moscow will use the time spent on any negotiation to train and mobilize its forces in order to launch a bigger offensive. U.S. media recently reported that some senior officials were beginning to encourage Ukraine to consider talks. Ukraine has made major advances against Russian forces in recent weeks, taking control of key areas, including the city of Kherson. Since the start of the war in Ukraine, Western countries have delivered batch after batch of arms supplies to Ukraine. The West says Kiev needs them to defend itself, but opponents of the policy believe such deliveries would only prolong the war. During our news review program, we'll discuss the issue in depth. Let's take a look.
And I welcome everyone to the news review program where we get in depth in one of the day's top stories. The UK has announced a new military aid package for Ukraine nearly 10 months after the launch of the Russian war on the country.
So to help you defend yourselves, we are today providing new air defense support, including 120 anti-aircraft guns, radar, and anti-drone equipment. We're extending our training for the Ukrainian armed forces to include specialist expertise from UK medics and engineers.
Sunak added that London will step up support for Kiev through the winter. The UK premier said aid includes winter kits for Ukrainian troops and another £16 million of humanitarian assistance for food and shelter. And now joining us for the program is Paul Lurie, former U.S. government advisor, joining us from Berkeley, California, and Arnold August, author and journalist, joining us from Montreal. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess we'll start with you, Arnold, Mr. Arnold August. They're joining us from Montreal. This continued supplies of weapons by the West to Kiev, is it going to help the Ukrainians win this war?
Well, I'm not so sure if the West is really interested in Ukraine winning the war. Even some of their own advisors and generals have to admit that it's practically impossible for Ukraine to win that war. But what they are interested in doing is prolonging it. Like in the statement that you just quoted regarding the British Prime Minister, the expenses and the military equipment is not for this year, it's for next year, 2013. So look, they're looking for a very long, drawn-out war in order to keep the military supplies going to Ukraine. And this has to be necessarily on the basis of lies. For example, the British Prime Minister said today that Ukraine is successfully pushing back Russia. That is not the case. And also in that same statement, as a pretext or a reason for providing new anti-aircraft missiles to Ukraine, they falsely say that Iran is providing drones to Ukraine, which is not the case. If the West has that, if Russia has these drones, they were sent to Russia before the war broke out. So there's a whole series of lies going on, which is key for them to keep this myth going that Ukraine can win. Now, just a few days ago, we had this completely false flag that 15,000 people were to be executed in Iran. And this is as soon as, of course, it is not true, but some leaders such as Trudeau, Prime Minister Trudeau of Canada, actually retweeted that. So it just goes to show you how far this war, like other wars previously, is really based on the issue of lies.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold, August, and Paul Rudy. Welcome to the program here. Now, Paul, it's crazy to think since February 24th till present day that the UK has seen three premiers presiding over this war. We've seen Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, and now Rishi Sunak in a short amount of time, all of them overeager to arm the Ukrainians, none of them pushing or overeager to push for a political solution. Why?
They don't follow their own people. They're not in control. It's the United States and NATO that are controlling Ukraine. So if you want a decision out of Ukraine, you have to go to Washington to get it. You didn't know that Washington is the capital of Ukraine, did you? But in practical terms, that's the situation. I think what's going on here is that the resources of not only the UK, but Germany and all the other NATO countries are being drained by the United States. The United States is using the contributions, the NATO contributions of all the NATO countries, as well as its own resources, to pour them into Ukraine at a time when they don't have those resources available. The resources that they're talking about right now are resources in the future. Maybe they'll have all of these. At some point, they promise these resources, but they don't exist today. They haven't been manufactured yet. So this is a way to further impoverish Europe so that Europe will have to go to the U.S. It'll have to invest in the U.S. in order to get the resources it needs because it can't produce them itself. So it's a way of asserting U.S. domination, not even over Ukraine, or much less Russia, but on the rest of Europe.
Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us on the program. Mr. Paul Lurie, they're joining us from Berkeley, California. And Mr. Arnold August joining us out of Montreal. That's a wrap for this segment of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
In Malaysia, the country's opposition leader and a former prime minister both claim victory in general elections. Opposition leader Anwar Ibrahim claims his coalition has secured enough seats to form the next government, while former premier Muhyiddin Yassin says he is in talks to form the next cabinet. Official results, however, show a hung parliament. With 202 out of the 219 seats counted, the Election Commission says Anwar's Pakatan Harapan coalition is leading with 76 seats, while Muhyiddin's Perikatan Nasional alliance has won 73 seats. Failure by the main parties to win a majority means a combination of them would have to build a majority alliance to form a government. A historic snowstorm has slammed western parts of the U.S. state of New York with over 6 feet of snow in some places. The heavy snowfall has restricted road travel and forced airlines to cancel flights in the hard-hit Buffalo area. New York Governor Kathy Hochul has called in the National Guard to help with snow removal. She said almost 300 people have been rescued. At least 2 deaths have also been reported. Together, 11 counties are under an emergency declaration. This as more snowfall is predicted throughout the weekend. FIFA President Gianni Infantino has slammed European countries, calling out the hypocrisy of those who criticize the World Cup host Qatar over moral issues. Infantino, who will stand unopposed for re-election as FIFA president next March, argued that while Europe doesn't allow any of the migrants to work legally inside the EU borders, Qatar offers them real opportunities. Qatar hired 30,000 laborers from some Asian countries to build stadiums as well as some other infrastructure. The death of some of those migrants working on the projects has drawn heavy criticism from human rights groups.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure. From wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely Thou art the All-Forgiving, the All-Compassionate.
In the limelight.
Given the lower cost and shorter time of trade via route, Iran can become the main trade link between Asia and Europe and effectively neutralize the U.S. measures aimed to isolate the Islamic Republic from the global economy. Also, Iran and Venezuela have inked a series of major accords that will definitely make Caracas, its economy, and the welfare of its people immune to any more sabotage by Washington. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Iran Times wrote in this regard, the agreement for launching INSTC was signed by Iran, India, and Russia in 2000. However, despite all the interest and hype, the attention to the route faded in time due to geopolitical hurdles, including the global economic stagnation, the U.S. sanctions on Iran, the conflict in Karabakh, and the pandemic. Now, the multimodal network of ships, rail, and roads is once again gaining its importance as the most important trade link between Asia and Europe. According to official data, one of the major advantages of this transportation route is that the cost of transporting goods through this corridor is cheaper 30%. It also halts the time it takes to transport Indian goods to Russia via the Suez Canal. Iran can use this transit route to distribute European commodities in the shortest possible time and at a lower cost than other routes to the Indian Ocean and the Persian Gulf. It is predicted that after the full operation of INSTC, Iran will be able to earn $20 billion in transit profits annually, something helping it reduce its dependence on oil revenues amid the American ban on the sector. The Islamic Republic of Iran has been taking serious measures for the development of its railway network as well as its ports and shipping infrastructure in order to encourage more countries to join the project. Using the capacities of INSTC, Iran will be able not only to expand the volume of trade with Russia and the countries of the region, it can also gain a huge share of the mentioned countries' annual transits. Currently, Russia has proposed to take part in some railway projects in Iran in order to accelerate the development of the Islamic Republic's railway network along the mentioned route. Recently, Igor Yevgenyevich Levitin, aide to the President of Russian Federation, visited Iran on the top of a high-ranking delegation to meet with Iranian Transport and Urban Development Minister Rostam Qasemi and discuss the expansion of transport ties. According to the Iranian Transport Ministry, Levitin was tasked by Russian President Vladimir Putin to take the necessary measures for the implementation of Iran's Rasht Astara railway and the signaling of the country's Incheborun-Garmsar railway line, both of which are along the INSTC route. Besides linking India to Europe via this corridor, Iran can connect Central Asia to the Indian Ocean and the Persian Gulf. Landlocked countries in Central Asia can use the corridor's railway to access the high seas. Over time, Iran's place in the corridor would become known to all. Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Turkey, Iraq, and Afghanistan have also shown interest in joining the huge project by linking their railways to that of Iran. Earlier this month, Kazakhstan reached an agreement with the Islamic Republic of Iran for using the country's rail network and the southern Shahid Rajai port for transiting goods to the Central Asian and Commonwealth of Independent States, CIS, regions. Iran has also been seeking to join its railway with Iraq in order to use the Arab country to facilitate access to the Syrian market. This way, Syria can also be somehow linked to the INSTC. The rail and sea route can also join the Chinese Road and Belt project, which seeks to revive the ancient Silk Road. As one of Iran's major trade partners, China has also shifted to Central Asia and the Caspian Sea to transit its goods to Europe after the eruption of the Eastern Europe crisis, and Iran could play a significant role in delivering Chinese goods to their destinations. The current international conditions have presented Iran with a proper opportunity to play a bold role in the broader implementation of the INSTC and to transform into a regional trade hub by developing its rail and transit infrastructure.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The story, the closeness of hearts and love. Sometimes wars are silent and hidden with an attractive and charming look. Such wars are sometimes more threatening and result in more victims. Like the war that I want to tell you about. A war that you may not have even imagined, but we are in the middle of the battlefield. I want to start my story with a question. Why is fast food so popular in this era? One recipe and one taste. Everything is similar. Ready-to-eat foods are without stories because there is no time to tell stories in the middle of the battlefield. We can find them in these hypermarkets. There is no story here. The story of each product is summarized in barcodes and a few lines and numbers below them. It doesn't matter where the food comes from. They say here instead of everywhere. Here, like on the battlefield, everything happens fast. Undoubtedly, every food has a story, even if we don't have time to hear it. Foods sometimes make up their own stories, which are sometimes scary and bitter. The scary story of Zahak started from the kitchen. Foods have their own stories and make up other stories, like potatoes. The potato. How the Humble Spud Rescued the Western World is the name of a book by Larry Zuckerman. It is about the potato and its relationship with the Industrial Revolution. Who would believe that potatoes played a key role in one of the biggest events in human history? I asked Larry Zuckerman how potatoes suddenly became a widespread food in the world.
So I would not say that it caused the Industrial Revolution, but I would go so far as to say that in England, it helped make the Industrial Revolution possible because it sustained the people who were doing the industry. When factory workers got off shift, the last thing they really wanted to do was cook. And right outside the factory gates were people who had set up carts with ovens, and they would bake the potatoes. And they would sell them for cheap, and people would have a hot baked potato coming right off the factory floor, a nice instant treat. And that was, in a sense, the beginning of modern street food. So the pace of life began to increase. I think the industrialization happened first, and the potato became necessary for it to continue or made it easier.
The potato story was about pace. Life had become too fast. In that era, people were in a hurry for everything. Street food was a new way to save time. Street foods are prepared in the shortest time and can be eaten anywhere. Then there was enough time for people to do more important things than cooking and eating. In those days, people tried to spend their time to produce more products. After many years doing the same thing, people realized that they were producing much more goods than they needed. People had to consume more goods because production was increasing. Otherwise, there would be no production. In this way, humans enter the era of mass consumption. Mass production and consumption meant that previous methods had to be changed. For example, the chicken meat and beef consumed by humans were obtained from farms in the past, but in that era, the farms could not supply this amount of meat anymore. So industrial livestock production came into existence. Animal husbandry describes how animals gain a lot of weight in a short time. For example, the weight that chickens gain in 6 weeks in today's industrial poultry farming is almost twice the weight that chicks gained in the same period of time 50 years ago in farms. This rapid growth of chicken in a short time and under unusual conditions inflicted a lot of pain on them in their short life, kind of pain that few people have heard about. Earlier I said that foods in the new supermarkets do not have a story, but it is better to say that they have a story, but it is not written anywhere. Peter Singer. He's one of the greatest philosophers in the world. He wrote a book on the story of pain. In his book, Animal Liberation, he talks about the great pain that industrial animal production inflicts on animals. This is the last chapter of the short life of industrial chickens. Thank you. asked Peter Singer what made a philosopher like him write a book about the short and painful life of these animals.
Well, I am primarily concerned about the suffering we inflict on animals. I think we should not do that as an ethical imperative. I think in the way we treat animals, especially in factory farms, it is indisputable. So many people, when they think about animals being farmed, they think of animals outside grazing in the fields. But unfortunately, over the past 50 years, in many countries, animals, or most animals, are no longer in the fields.
Can you give us a talk about the suffering imposed, for example, to hens in factory farming?
In some cases, the confinement is very tight. An example of that would be for hens who are laying eggs. So the standard industrial cage, and that's not just for one hen, that might be for four or five hens. So each hen in this cage has just a very small amount of space. They're very crowded together and they can't even stretch their wings. In fact, some of the cages are so small that even one bird in the cage could not stretch her wings fully. And instead of there being one bird, there are four or five birds.
Mass and high-speed production of food was not possible without the help of machines, so foods were produced by machines. Machines did not show mercy to animals either. It means that humans did not program the machines for such aim. Important that animals had souls, emotions, and feelings. From then on, animals were just goods that had to be reproduced, sold, and consumed rapidly. Whatever Peter Singer explained about the industrial animal production in chickens' case fits about cows and calves and industrial cattle farming too. It refers to raising a large number of cows in very large dairy farms with conditions that were unimaginable before this era. In these farms, cows have to eat more to grow faster. Fast production of meat and milk should be done in any possible way. There had to be changes in the stomach or the feeding method of cows so that they could eat more and more. Cows couldn't grow as fast as possible by eating natural fodder, considering the amount of market demand. So farmers had to look for other materials for cow feed. So corn became a key element in the cow's growth. This large amount of corn had to be produced so that they could eat and grow faster. The new issue was the mass production of corn. This amount of corn should have been produced in the shortest time. Statistics of the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations showed the world production of corn increased sevenfold between 1995 and 2005. This rapid growth was achieved at the cost of the destruction of a large part of the Amazon forest and other arable lands of this planet. According to statistics, 67% of the world's agricultural lands have been infertile. The cruel cycle of industrial meat production does not spare even oil, and they use a large amount of this fossil fuel for tractors and food delivery trucks. According to the statistics, it takes 5 barrels of oil to grow a beef cattle. Numbers show for every 120 grams of beef, 7.5 square meters of fertile forests are destroyed, and as a result, 240 kilograms of carbon dioxide are released. More and faster production of food causes a lot of suffering for animals and also causes a lot of damage to nature. One out of 8 people in today's world is either very fat or very thin. The rest of the people may not be fat or thin, but they do not use diverse nutrition resources. It means that in today's world, everyone is hungry in some way, even if they don't know it themselves. Considering the amount of destruction of Earth and the resources and this amount of mass production of food, why should people be hungry? Mass and abundant production cannot be a warning. The age of mass production. In this era, mass profit was only possible with mass production. So every obstacle in the way of mass production had to be removed. Machine-processed foods were the same in size and ingredients. They were produced and consumed with the same strategy. This means that the consumer's tastes should have been similar to each other. From then on, the good food was cooked as fast as possible and was also easy to eat. The hero of this story was sausage. Sausage is a standardized food that everyone without any taste likes. Its components cannot be distinguished from each other, and it can be produced and consumed very quickly. But food like calipoche has characteristics that make it different from sausage. It is not a dish that everyone likes. It takes a long time to cook this dish. The ones who eat this kind of meal know exactly what they're going to eat. If I want to eat sheep's eyes, I know exactly what part of the sheep I want to eat. I can know about the different parts of a sheep's body. Many don't like this dish and never enter a tabakhi. In a tabakhi, the cook plays a very important role. Most of the time, he is the hero of the story. Customers know the story of calipoche with its cook. The green eyes of the cook are part of the taste of the food that is eaten. Concept like local customers was against the trend that wanted to make food global. The good food is loved by all people everywhere in the world. Food that can be mass produced, mass sold, and mass profitable. The new era is about machines and pace. In this period, the good food is in harmony with machines. It means that it can be produced with the help of a machine and can be eaten in cars. The story of unifying the tastes of all the people of the world started from serving food inside of vehicles. McDonald's was the first restaurant that started serving food in the cars. An idea that, after a few decades, turned this restaurant into the second largest private restaurant in the world. Now McDonald's has 37,800 branches in 119 countries. These branches provide food with similar tastes to 64 million customers around the world on a daily basis. McDonald's quickly removed taste and chef from the story of food. In this age, no one asks himself why all the people everywhere in the world should love the same kind of food. This fast food company went beyond a way of consuming food and became a lifestyle. George Ritzer, American sociologist, uses McDonaldization as a new concept to explain McDonald's impacts on different communities. He believes that McDonald's influence is expanded. In this opinion, in the new age, everything is becoming part of McDonaldization. Speed is a modern phenomenon that has become a disaster for human lives and the Earth. Speed in food production and consumption means harming Mother Earth. It means the ruination of water, soil, and the environment. Fast food causes the loss of diversity and cultural values and even increases the number of hungry people, and it harms people's health. Many years passed until they knew about this widespread destruction. People looked for a quick solution to prevent this destruction. Preventing widespread meat eating and finding an alternative to it was the first thing that came to their minds in this era. So movements were formed to announce this alternative. These movements, which are sometimes accompanied by famous figures, seek to eliminate animal meat and replace it with other creatures. Insects are one of the serious proposals to be used instead of the meat of animals. Those people who are the fans of entomophagy believe the land and resources used to produce 200 grams of beef are equal to the land and resources used to grow 2,000 grams of insects. So it is probably better to raise and eat insects to raise cattle. Vegan-friendly restaurants are expanding with this idea. In these restaurants, the food has a look of meat, but with vegetables as its components. This restaurant only serves vegetarian meals, and it is full of things that reminds us of former times. Television was slowly forgotten by the rise of social media. The age of television was the age of mass production, and the era of social media is a period of mass consumption. In this era, everything is related to illustration. The value of products are determined by the attractiveness of their images. In the era of image consumption, McDonald's, which invited everyone to eat the same type of food, gradually fell out of favor, giving way to tasters who advertise foods with a completely different appearance. In this new battlefield, these tasters give the order to attack. Sauce, cheese, and Instagram. If these three items are properly put together, they can do miracles in the age of visualization of the world. Prayer for the Whale is the name of a film about food. food of Alaskan people who eat whale meat. But before hunting a whale, they pray with it. They believe that the whale gives itself to the hunters. I asked Kili Yuyan, the director of the film, about these strange customs and beliefs.
He's saying, thank you to the whales for coming back year after year. Thank you for giving yourselves. The Nyupyak always say that the whale is giving itself to you. And you can really see that the whaling is good for the food. It's part of the community. It's culturally very powerful because it's the primary source of identity. Also, you know, there are whaling cultures, so they feel very much tied to the whale. The fate of the whale is the fate of the people. And so all of that is 100% integrated.
It seems that whaling is something tough to do. Didn't people of that region try to change their diet to get rid of whaling difficulties?
No, you know, Inuit peoples eat all meat. And it's very difficult for outsiders to understand that that is a necessary part of life. And that's how, culturally speaking, that's important.
People who pray for their food, people who eat meat, but do not disturb the balance of nature and environment. People whose identity and culture are mixed with the food they eat. Kili Yuyan believes that we will approach the balance if the intermediaries are removed and humans establish direct contact with the earth. This is not an easy task in today's world. How can one think about reducing the distance between the man and the earth in the world of profit, speed, and capital? Mohammad Qayyim Panah has taken good steps to reduce this gap. Mohammad tries to reduce the distance between farmer and consumer with an innovative idea and by establishing a startup. The story of the product is the story of who, where, and how each product was grown and produced. These stories make other new stories, different stories. The story you heard was not the story of war. It was a story of the closeness of hearts and love. But the war is still going on. Man's war with himself, with animals and plants, and with the earth. We may not have started this war, but we are definitely involved in its fate. The continuation of this war depends on the choices we make for our daily food.
There is no end in sight for living crisis in Europe. Winter is coming and Europeans are suffering from lack of energy due to Russia sanctions. This is why European leaders don't have their independent policy and just follow in U.S. footsteps. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT had an eye on this issue, writing, "France faces a greater risk of running short on electricity in January because the availability of the country's nuclear plants will probably be lower than previously forecast," National Grid operator RTE warned recently. RTE, which has been issuing updates of the situation on a monthly basis, also noted that a decrease in the demand for power is making a shortage next month, less likely than previously expected. The situation appears less risky in December and from the end of February, but the month of January now concentrates more risks than in the previous analysis, said RTE. Grid operator Electricité de France, EDF, earlier warned that repairs and maintenance on almost half of the nation's nuclear plants may turn France, which has traditionally been a power exporter, into an importer this year. France generates roughly 70% of its electricity from 56 nuclear reactors. However, it had just 31 of them online. EDF has plans to restart 15 units by the end of the year, with another 10 in the first 2 months of 2023. Some other reactors will also have to be stopped for scheduled maintenance. The French government has called on businesses and households to conserve energy to avoid blackouts. In the event of a possible electricity shortage, RTE will launch an eco-watt red alert 3 days in advance, demanding reduced consumption. The risk of restoring to the eco-watt